Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
Well, folks, it's now or never. Are we going to actually answer the call? As a matter of fact, that was kind of the message I sent to the state legislators in my constitutional minute yesterday, Sunday. And so it was yesterday night. If you want to see these, I still haven't posted them. I will get them posted this week. But bottom line, we're actually writing the annals of history of one of two things. There's two things that are happening, or two possibilities regarding the outcome of what we are facing today. We will either write the history of how this society fell and was transitioned into a statist government, how the land of liberty was destroyed or killed and consumed by this all-encompassing, all-insatiable desire to control every facet of life in the world, this global communism, or the possibility of actually turning the page here, or turning the corner and righting the ship and stopping the incessant sucking and pulling of America into the abyss. So you're going to want to read this letter, and you're going to, or this Constitutional Minute email, and you're probably going to want to actually mark today's calendar, possibly tomorrow's calendar, because over the next couple of days, whatever it takes, we're going to go through a court of appeals issue of a lawsuit that we've told you about that is on its final thread. And unlike all the other lawsuits, now let me ask you this. Do you remember when the Texas and a few states kind of pushed forward on this election fraud and how they had these problems with, and they wanted to bring out the election issues. Now, to be clear, Texas themselves violated the Constitution. And I don't know what all the other states were, but I knew Texas was the big one that kind of initiated this. But they violated the Constitution by changing the manner of how the electors were chosen via the election. Only the state legislators could have done that, and they didn't do that. They didn't call them into session to do that. So what they did, and I'd have to go back to it, but if you go look at the original petition, somebody did it. Whether it was the governor, secretary of state, jurist, it doesn't matter. The Constitution does not allow anybody other than state legislators to legislate that very specific thing. And so, you know, I know people, I've heard a couple of progressives say, oh, you're arguing a technicality. And I go, so when you live in a land of laws, everybody argues technicality, even you, because they believe we live in a democracy, they want to get every vote counted. It doesn't matter whether it's legitimate. If they could get away with it, because under the rules of democracy, every vote counts. But actually, we live in a land of laws, and every vote doesn't count. Only valid votes count, and they do not want to create a mechanism to confirm that every vote casted was a valid vote. If it's in question, it cannot be counted. That's why they have provisional ballots. Provisional ballots will go off to the side and, you know, during the election time and after the election, they will go and verify whether these are legitimate ballots or not. Now, the real problem is not even just that. The deeper problem is the fact that there are states that have actually registered invaders into being able to vote here in America. So this election problem, and just to be really, really clear, if there's election fraud, if there's voter fraud, who has the responsibility jurisdiction-wise to actually hear the case? It's the state court. Because the Constitution does not give the federal government standing or jurisdiction over things that are left to the state. So when Texas and these other states came up and claimed voter fraud and so forth, even though they may have pointed towards the Electoral College, the basis of their complaint was the systemic voting system. And guess who has the jurisdiction over it? So technically, the federal courts were right. And I know a lot of people argue against that. And I'm sorry. It is what it is. You have to really look at where the light shines. Who has that responsibility? And when it comes to elections, then absolutely, states have that responsibility. This is why the lawsuit that Bob Schultz did, and I kind of helped convince him to do this as we talked about this on, it was early February, it was around my birthday time. And so when we talked about it, I'd like to say I was the one that convinced Bob to actually make this lawsuit. And what happened was we went through the 12th Amendment and he goes, wow, you're absolutely right. And so he initiated this lawsuit. But this lawsuit wasn't something out of thin air. This lawsuit was in response to the petition, the First Amendment petitions that were presented to Congress. Now, his petitions were delivered on the 4th of January. The Patriots' physical petitions that, you know, were challenging the election and so forth on January 6th that they label as an insurrection. And I keep telling people they need to start changing the paradigm to say, actually, this was a petition for the redress of grievances. And if this falls under that petition, this isn't just a right of assembly. This is a right to have access to government. Because clearly, the First Amendment does not allow government to create any laws to abridge that right. Doesn't matter. Tell me in the Constitution where it says, well, on January 6th, you don't have a right to petition government. It doesn't say that. It says the right shall not be abridged to petition government for the redress of grievances. So they had a right to be able to access the people's building, the people's capital, and be able to demand, you know, government address the issue and fix the problem. Now, everybody that was January 6th, their petition would have fell flat. And it was basically a dead letter because the federal government can't get involved in state issues. And see, here's the problem. What they were doing, in addition to, you know, not understanding that this is a petition and they should have done it as a petition instead of a protest, because you have a right to petition in person. You have that right. Again, go back to the First Amendment. Where does it say you cannot do it in person? Where does it say you cannot do it in mass persons? And as a matter of fact, what they can do is they can acknowledge how many people are out there and they can say, okay, we consider if everybody is on board with this particular petition. If not, you've got five or six other, you know, sub-factions, which there probably were, then each of those petitions should have been able to be brought forward in the people's house. Now, I understand they have things to do, but you know what? Government does not like it when you, the people, get in their hair and keep them from doing the things that the globalists expect them to do. They don't like this encumberment of this people. And so here's the funny thing. If you've understood what I said about the Democrats and how they want the people's voice, they want the people's counted and so forth. In other words, they want to make it like a government for the people. But if you understand the outcome, because what we see in our government today is exactly what they're modeling. And the government is deaf to the people. So the argument that they're trying to make is that, oh, we want everybody's voices heard, but only at one point in time, and that is on a piece of paper via the election. So when we start putting this into context, you start realizing that what they're doing is they're actually empowering a draconian autocratic state. one that will crush anybody that stands up against them. They only want your blessing. This is why Lenin, then Stalin, because this was kind of a little paradigm that transitioned over, and I think Stalin was credited for this, but this is how it went. It basically says, I don't care who votes and how they vote. I don't care. I only care how the votes are counted. This is why it was critical that 31 states got on board to allow the system to be able to inject more votes than there were registered voters in several states. Michigan was one of them. I think Georgia was another. The fact of the matter is, my friends, we are being played. And if we're not using the Constitution as our weapon against their tyranny, then we will lose this battle. But every time we use the Constitution, we will win. Now, we have some information, more information regarding Bob Schultz's case. But what I want to do is I kind of want to pick up where I left off before I dive into that, because I have received the motion of appeal from Bob regarding his right of petition, as well as how Congress violated the Constitution, and how a lawsuit is still out there pending. Nobody even knows about this lawsuit. And so what we need to do, and I'm going to reach out to a couple of legislators who I think their butts are in a sling, and we want you to help. We will be back with actually how you can get this going. So we'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much. Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our Republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the republic review model, on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416.
All right, my friends, so here we go. Let me get through the quick obligatories, because I can't spend too much time, and I really need to put these into the promos. Fortitude Financial Coaching, go call Gary Smith if you are ready to take control of your finances. If you're looking for education, as a matter of fact, this education is going to bloom in the state of Florida, and hopefully this can start actually perpetuating out to other states. ConstitutionEducation.us. Check it out. Timber Nation, hardwood furnishings, quality hardwood furnishings, even recommended by audiophile magazines. RadioDustCovers.com, if you're looking, if I didn't say so, TimberNation.com. RadioDustCovers.com for getting custom-made covers to protect your audio equipment, your radio equipment, your electronics that need to be protected from dander, from smoke, and those types of things that actually cause harm to the electronics. Now, AdLocal is the place you go if you are looking to get support, a domain hosting, whether that be email support, that type of stuff. If you're looking to get organized, give them a call. They will help you. They're patriotic, and they will give you a break because the owner, Ben Carr, is trying to support the patriotic cause any way he possibly can without losing his house, shirt, and everything else. But anyway, our comment line, 425-270-5416. So I was really kind of ranting on this, and this is why I want to finish what I was talking about on Friday so that we can move into this appeal by the We the People Foundation and Bob Schultz. As I was saying, it is everyone's job to hold both public servants accountable as well as our government. These are those who are the, you know, board of directors, your board of supervisors, your utility boards, your educational boards in your county. These are your county commissioners, your sheriff, your coroner, any type, your dog catcher, any type of person that is elected that requires to take an oath to support the Constitution. These are the public servants you have to start holding accountable. This does not mean a person must be perfect or cannot be forgiven when they make mistakes, but bottom line, they have to support the Constitution. I really don't care regarding, you know, there is something to be said with somebody that has, you know, moral turpitude, somebody that has actually no morals, they're amoral, they're a liability, they're a sociopath. You know, we do have problems with that, but to be clear, you know, there are people that have made mistakes in the past, and what the ad hominem attack, which is what progressives and those who lean in that type of distance, because if you look at America, there were a lot of people that were willing to forgive Bill Clinton for his past, but most people saw through that and didn't and they realized that it really wasn't his past. That was his lifestyle. He was a philanderer. I mean, right? He was a bastard. And he was a lying, cheating bastard. Because here's a man that grew up, never knew his father, right? He lied. He was actually caught guilty of perjury and impeached for it. And secondly, thirdly, he, you know, was caught in a tryst or an, you know, infidelity. So a lying, cheating bastard is an appropriate label for the man, right? Well, I mean, I think Obama is pretty close there. I don't know about the cheating part, but anyway, isn't it ironic that prior to Biden, the last two Democratic presidents, they were at least lying bastards? Interesting, isn't it? I mean, by definition, you could say that because both of them didn't know their fathers and both of them had lied and had been caught in lies. Anyway, getting back to holding people accountable, this brings us to the paradigm that we have to correct as we build up from the bottom. Now, I will tell you really quick, I had an awesome meeting with what we would call militia leaders or those types of people, you know, that the media calls paramilitary, but these are patriots. These people are absolutely concerned about the direction of this nation. It's not that they're trying to create a new government. They don't even want to have a civil war. As a matter of fact, the only reason more and more people buy guns, and as a matter of fact, this is proven. Go look at the statistics. Every time there is a discussion, even by Republican President Donald Trump, when he talked about banning bump stocks, what happened? There was a huge sale on bump stocks. Every time there's a talk about, you know, taking this away, every time politicians open their mouth about government, taking away your rights, like Obama sold more guns to America then any president, well, I don't know. I think Biden is going to be, you know, another huge May Day type of sale. I mean, just everybody's going to be going crazy buying up guns and ammo, what they can get. The only reason that the gun sales are being suppressed is because production is being suppressed, the availability of ammo and those types of things. We have no clue, really, where the sentiments and the anxiety that America is having because the markets are being managed. They're being manipulated. Because if you have a free market, then you can really see the outcome of how many more people are buying guns. I know people are still trying to buy guns. And there are guns that are available. It's just that the ammo is becoming really, really hard. And so we have to start understanding how to build up from the bottom correctly. So we know how to create a constitutional county correctly. We do know how to do this. And here's a hint, and it has nothing to do with joining any sheriff's organization. We have to start holding our sheriffs accountable to far more than just the Second Amendment. We have to get our sheriffs to actually recognize that the federal government is limited and defined by the enumerated powers, period. Their jurisdiction is defined by the enumerated powers, and clearly the enumerated roles and responsibilities that they actually have cognizance of, jurisdiction over, are things like the Electoral College. So we'll be bringing that up. Now, what I'm going to probably do, because this is where I would go into and start defining our government, because most people want to declare that our government is a constitutional republic, that we're not a democracy. I assert that that does not answer the question of why we're not a democracy or what type of government are we. We have to really look at the different layers of government within society, because there's the political factors, there is the financial or the economic factors, and so forth and so on. And so we will dive into government and so forth when we actually have the time, after I get through this judicial appeal to the appellate court. What ended up happening, and this is in my constitutional minutes of yesterday, what ended up happening, and so I'll kind of give you the high level. As you know, back in February, and I mentioned this at the beginning of the show, back in February last year, Bob Schultz actually filed a lawsuit against Congress. All of this information, by the way, all of these documents are out on our petitions page of Reclaiming the Republic. Now, as this moves forward, this was actually shut down after it went. So he filed, and he had to wait for the defendant to respond. Now, here's the interesting thing. The court did not shut down the case when it came before him. He had to wait until after I think it was 60 days, 45 days, whatever the time frame is, because if you're part of the government, you have this protection. A typical lawsuit, you have to respond within 15 days. But if you're government, you get 45, three times the amount, and or 60, which is even more than that. And so When we start looking at the process, the court should have basically, instead of accepting that and starting the clock, the court should have basically ruled that he had no standing, you know, so that we could have gotten moving forward. But they didn't. They basically stonewalled, and they allowed this time on the clock to tick by so that the Biden administration could start doing its damage. They're all working together. And so this is why the only way we can hold our government, our federal government, the national government, accountable to the Constitution is via the Constitution itself. We have to actually exercise republic review. We'll get into that as we move forward. But the fact of the matter is, this lawsuit went its full time. Then, I think it was in May or June, I'm pretty sure it was May, when Bob Schultz actually filed for his, you know, request for summary judgment. Well, as soon as it got in front of the judge itself, the judge didn't even bring the parties in. The judge basically just ruled against the case at that point in time. That's when they did their first. See, they stonewalled and then they blocked. They pushed them out of the court and said, sorry, you don't have any standing. Now, to be clear, standing has, you know, whether you actually have a legitimate purpose of being there and that the court has jurisdiction. You got to understand, the first question a court has to ask itself is, do we have jurisdiction over this matter? And when it comes to all the things that they don't have jurisdiction, like abortion, marriage, and these types of things, they quickly scoop up. But here, the Electoral College that would undo their progressive guardian or their progressive leader in moving the globalist agenda forward, of course, now they don't have jurisdiction. We're going to be right back after these two promos. If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me. AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and the 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath even though we're not required to take it because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station. Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416. Okay, so let me just cut to the chase. So as this case went forward into the appeals process, what was interesting is the appeals process allowed Bob to actually bring in evidence. And he said that that typically isn't normal in the Flo case, because the appeals court wanted to really find out, you know, more about the meat of the argument. He says typically the appeals case would take the information from the court and the court's the initial court or the district court's ruling, like they call it the district court, and they go, okay, well, let's move forward. Now you got to remember that there are judges that have been appointed throughout the republic at the federal level that have been a part of the deep state for a long time. It's very hard to get into a court where you have a conservative, or I should say a more constitutional leaning judge. As we look at Trump's appointees, we can really tell, because he was told who would be the best. He didn't make, I don't know if he really made the decision. He should have looked at a very broad and should have reached towards, you know, an extreme. Because when you really look at a person that is actually, you know, supporting the militia, supporting the Constitution, that person today would be considered an extreme radical. And when the judges that he selected or nominated were really more of milquetoast And I'll just say that they were milquetoast on the left side, which is why you see the types of rulings and actually the opinions that have come from them. I do not believe we have a right-leaning. I still think that the Supreme Court, is left-leaning. When I hear the only person on the court that seems to be really as the only originalist on the court is Justice Thomas. So as the appeals process moved forward, and I don't know what the date was, but as the appeal process moved forward this past year, the appeals came back, and we're going to get into the dates and all of that because Bob has all the facts right here. This is an 8-pager. This is why you're going to want to actually come back and listen to this. You can read it. We're going to be posting this if you want to read this, but we're going to go through this because I know a lot of people don't take the time to necessarily go and read it. But we want you to actually hear what Bob actually said because some of these points are right on. I mean, he hits this out of the park. This is a home run, as far as I'm concerned, a legal, constitutional home run. There's only one thing I recommended to him yesterday, and I think it may have been either too radical for him or whatever, because he chose not to include Section 3 of the 14th Amendment regarding the panel of judges. Maybe because it's going back to the same panel saying, we believe you were wrong, and then the next case or the next... And oh, by the way, this costs Bob money. He does not have a foundation that pays him. Everything really is coming out of his pocket. And so if you want to financially support somebody, I believe if you go to the We the People Foundation, there's a mechanism to donate. Be happy to plug for him because I think he spends just in filing processes, it costs him $5,000-$6,000 because of the copies he has to make. I mean, there's a lot of administrative cost. And he actually is mailing, by the way, this particular, what I'm reading today is in the mail. The court hasn't even received it yet. Okay. So this is how fresh and hot this is. Now, so this is the appeal to the appellate court. And so the first question is, or the first statement, whether the panel judicially repealed. This is actually out of, so I'm now reading what Bob had submitted. Whether the panel judicially repealed constitutional standing and by extension an essential principle of our constitutional republic, separation of powers. Now remember, they stepped forward regarding some judges that Obama seated when technically Congress was not out of session and claimed that they were. And Obama was basically slapped for violating the separations of powers. Anyway, but here is clearly a separation of powers violation because the executive at these state levels, as well as the judiciary at the state level, overstepped their bounds that was strictly delineated in the Constitution that the legislature had to do this. So anyway, the panel's judgment reads in part, quote, the district court properly dismissed the case without prejudice for lack of subject matter jurisdiction, what they call standing. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? The Electoral College right there in Article 2, the 12th Amendment right there in the Constitution, the process of choosing the president and what they were supposed to do. And this is the going on. This is what they say. Because appellants fail to establish their standing to sue. Okay. In their complaint under the heading, quote, jurisdiction and venue, close quote, A3 plaintiffs claimed, and when he says A3, he's referring to the argument that he provided. Plaintiffs claimed constitutional standing. They wrote, quote, the claims arise under the Constitution of the United States. The controversy involves violations of the Constitution. The court has subject matter jurisdiction under Article 3, Section 2 of the Federal Constitution, which reads in relevant part, quote, the judicial power shall extend to all cases in law and equity arising under this Constitution, close quote. Constitutional standing is jurisdictional. See Raines v. Byrd, 521 U.S. 811-819 of 1997. If a court has constitutional jurisdiction to adjudicate, it has a, quote, virtually unflagging obligation to do so. Colorado River Water Conservation District 5, United States 424, U.S. 800-820, 1976. So he's giving some case law of how these, they're obligated. Like it just said, quote, virtually unflagging obligation, close quote. He moves on and says, the quote, the judiciary cannot, and he's quoting this again, this Colorado River Water Conservation out of a federal court, quote, the judiciary cannot, as the legislature may, avoid a measure because it approaches the confines of the Constitution. We cannot pass it by because it is doubtful. Whatever doubts with whatever difficulties as a result may be attended, we might decide it. If it be brought before us, we have no more right to decline the exercise of jurisdiction which is given than to usurp that which is not given. The one or the other would be treason to the Constitution. So this is Cohens v. Virginia. Now, this is one of the landmark cases that created unconstitutional footings. But this is where he basically, this is John Marshall back in 1812 that actually stated this. And he basically said that the courts actually have to step in and that they have to exercise their jurisprudence regarding any type of case that falls within their jurisdiction. Not to do so would be tantamount to usurping jurisdiction on matters such as life, such as education, such as health care, such as marriage, where there is no jurisdiction delegated to the federal government. Moving on, given the complainant's direct fact-finding challenge to Congress's violation of the Constitution's electors' guarantee and petition clauses, so there are three problems or violations, and I'm only focused on the Electoral College process, the guarantee clause of the Republican form of government, as well as the petitions clause, because what we did was we used the mechanism, our constitutional right, the First Amendment petition, to basically tell them, you cannot accept this, and we gave them the legal arguments why, this Electoral College for 2020. Moving on, and thus plaintiffs' constitutional standing, the court is duty-bound. It has an, quote, unflagging obligation, close quote, to adjudicate by applying the law to the facts of the case, to do what the district court and the panel have done, in other words, to judicially craft a set of exceptions to the obligation to hear and decide a matter that is within the court's jurisdiction is treason to the Constitution. Now, those aren't his words. Those are John Marshall's words regarding treason. I mean, that's what John Marshall just said. The district court declared plaintiffs lack standing because, quote, neither plaintiff has asserted that their injury is in any way distinct from that suffered by any other taxpayer or citizen. And, quote, Schultz and Fuchsia have asserted no facts that show injury particularized to them. So what's really interesting is just because everybody was – so if you understand what they just said – if the court violates or allows a violation of the Constitution to move forward and everybody's injured, but he's the only one suing, then he doesn't have any standing. What? Are you kidding me? This is not about a personal injury case. This is literally about the letter of the law being violated. I'm sorry, I'm getting a little bit too passionate, but we will be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires two-thirds of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. Folks, as you know, online fraud is on the rise, and it's more important than ever for your new and existing customers to be able to determine whether they are using a website with a secured connection. If you didn't know, Google mandated in 2017 that all data submitted to its linked websites must be secure with SSL certificates. Without SSL certificates, your site is listed by Google as not secure. In other words, without these certificates, your site will be harder to find, and this will impact new traffic and ultimately your revenue. Whether you're a blogger or in e-commerce, AdLocal will help protect your website from all forms of data breaches, phishing scams, and build a secure environment for your businesses, big or small. Contact AdLocal by calling 866-88-ADLOCAL. Or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com for custom pricing. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so let me take a real quick aside, because I just happened to notice during the break about something, and I want you to understand how the media works. Anytime they have a heartwarming story about a conservative, to actually shine a nice light on this conservative, then you are being manipulated, because that is not a conservative. They only go out of their way to highlight the operatives in the conservative movement, like Liz Cheney and just today Pence. Because if you Google Pence's rabbit died, the fact that that became news, and if you looked on Bing or some of the leading information of here's what's happened today, they actually gave a lead, or it became a prominent story out of all of America that they would put in, their headlines. I mean, that's not even a backstory. His rabbit died. Wow. Folks, we've been played, and I've been telling you, we've been played for well over a century. They know how to manipulate, and they've gotten really good. And it's not because we were really smart. It's because the designer of manipulation knows how to exploit the weaknesses of mankind. The designer of manipulation is the evil one. I'm just telling you that, just like the Constitution, if you believe the Constitution was truly inspired, just as the framers asserted in their first thanksgiving for the nation, of giving service to him, the creator, who inspired and provided the tranquility and peace and constitution to this nation. I mean, clearly, all of these men recognize the divine hand of providence in the forming of this nation, as well as our constitution. If they can do that, I'm telling you that the dark one does the exact same thing with those who serve him. Adam Weishaupt wrote in his charter organization what they needed to do by using the education system, and how the education system would be the foundation of them taking over the world. This is back in 1776, folks, the same time the Declaration of Independence was formed. This is when Adam Weishaupt wrote out this strategy. You can't tell me that this guy was really that smart. He was well indoctrinated and or inspired and educated by the Dark One, because this type of stuff is something that can only be found in like biblical type of analogies, stories, or what is it? It's not an analogy. It's a word for a story, a biblical type of story. Forgive me. And I know one of you is going to help me, because sometimes I get tongue-tied or held up on a word. But the fact of the matter is, if you have inspiration coming from the divine hand of providence, the Dark One also works his web of evil with those who follow him. And this is why, if you understand how evil the mainstream media is, this is why Pence is in the news and his dead rabbit. Wow, that's world news right there for you. National news. Anyway, let's get back to what I was reading. The panel went along with the district court's unconstitutional, judicially crafted, impossible to satisfy exception to the obligation to hear and decide a matter that is within the court's jurisdiction. That's a double jab with a right hook. And right-handed hook. According to the panel, Congress or anyone in the legislative and executive branches can violate any provision of the Constitution. In other words, act outside the boundaries drawn around the power by the people, thus definitively and conclusively, in parentheses, concretely, injure all citizens in like manner, and the judiciary must therefore refuse to adjudicate a citizen's challenge to the infringement? That is treason to the Constitution. As appellates wrote on page 45, and you're not going to get this on Fox News. You do not get this type of information and these types of arguments so that you really understand what's going on, folks, from the mainstream media. This is why when I talk to anybody about the Texas or these different state lawsuits about election fraud and voter fraud, those were to get you to think, oh, technically the court had no standing. This is why there was not a lot of buildup on the back end to say we need to circle the wagons and figure out a better way. Because bottom line, they didn't do this. They couldn't say that because of the election fraud, because the federal government has no standing, or the federal government has no jurisdiction over those types of matters. They have jurisdiction over all things under the Constitution. And elections, only thing that they have jurisdiction on after it's sought through the court of election fraud, the court actually has to determine whether election fraud has occurred or not by non-citizens. Anyway, as appellates wrote on page 45 of their brief, quote, Congress must not be enabled by the court to effectively abolish any provision of the Constitution on the ground that the violation injures all citizens equally and impartially without distinction. That's a backhanded slap right in the face. Such a doctrine is tyrannical, especially when coupled with a judicial doctrine that declares government is not obligated to respond to proper petitions for redress of grievances, for they would severely cripple the principles of separation of powers and checks and balances, thereby rendering the Constitution itself good for nothing. This is where we're at. We're going to ask you, we're going to solicit with you, we're going to plead and beg you to make some very specific calls as I've finished reading this. I'm still on page 2. The reason why is because we need you to make some very specific phone calls. This is going to be going up on the website, and as soon as it's up, it won't be up probably tonight, but it will be up by tomorrow, hopefully, and I will tell you in tomorrow's show whether it's up or not. But we want you to be very clear. We need you to make very specific phone calls to very specific offices And when you call and they ask you, you know, are you a constituent? When it comes to the Constitution, reciprocity is guaranteed for all, that the rights of the citizens cannot be infringed by any state, and everybody who is a public servant is obligated. So when they say, are you a constituent? If you are a U.S. citizen, then, and that public servant is a servant of the Constitution, then yes, you are a constituent of any public servant. And we have a right to demand they follow. This is the only thing we can do. We can't back their elections, but we can demand that they follow the Constitution. We can demand that they comply to the Constitution. So, moving on. The panel's position is untenable and must be reversed, for it has the judiciary repealing constitutional jurisdiction and, by extension, the essential principle of separation of powers, allowing the legislative and or executive to freely violate any prohibition or mandate the people have placed on the ground or on the government by the terms. Sorry about that. Let me go back. Any prohibition or mandate the people have placed on the government by the terms of their constitution, thereby shifting the ultimate power in our society from the people to the government where it was not intended to reside. Herein denying appellates their right to constitutional standing, the court has allowed Congress to displace the power committed by the Constitution to the state legislatures to direct how presidential electors are appointed. We, as law-abiding society, do not amend the Constitution by ignoring it. As the facts of the case prove, Congress has, or by judicial repeal, as the panel would have us do, none is above the law. Now, we're getting into Section 2. Whether the panel's decision judicially repealed constitutional accountability and, by extension, an essential principle underlying our constitutional republic, checks and balances. The panel's judgment reads in part, finally, the district court correctly determined the complainant did not challenge Congress's alleged failure to respond to the appellate's petition because the complainant does not set forward such a claim nor seek any relief in connection with the alleged failure to respond. However, in the complainant, under the heading, quote, factual background, appellants detailed the contents of the subject First Amendment petition for the redress of violations of the electors and guarantee clauses of the Constitution and the extraordinary steps taken by plaintiffs beginning on December 18, 2020, to ensure all members of Congress were served with a copy of the petition signed by citizen voters residing in all 50 states and do so days before January. Now, we're out. So what we're going to do, we're out of time. What we're going to do is we're going to come back to this and we will start off with Section 2 on Tuesday. You're going to want to hear the rest of this because this is history, folks. This is the official slamming of the door of supporting the Constitution by our judiciary. I'm G.R. Moby. We're Reclaiming the Republic. We need your help. God bless. Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org
and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.